October 16th, 2009. It's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
Hi, everybody. It's Jeff Robbins from Lullabot here with podcast number 78. We get together every couple of weeks and do a podcast, talk about Drupal. Drupal. I'm here with
Angie Byron
and
Jeff Eaton,
as well as
Addie Berry
and
Karen Stevenson.
Team Lullabot, well, some of them, here to talk about, what are we calling it? Drupal screw-ups? What I did wrong with Drupal on my summer vacation?
How I broke my website?
How I broke my first web Drupal website? How Drupal done me wrong?
We are stupid, too.
Newbies are people, too.
Drupal left me and took my dog.
Drupal ran away with my girl.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, okay. So seriously, though, we could just go on for hours.
We'll figure out a title by the end of this thing. But yeah. So yeah, it's today's podcast. We're going to talk about common mistakes that even we goodness,
what us?
I know, no. have made with Drupal. And I think it'd be good podcast for anyone who's new to Drupal. And finding themselves making mistakes like these themselves, maybe can learn a thing or two from us. A little bit of news first. We've got Do It With Drupal. The Do It With Drupal seminar is a yearly conference that Lullabot runs in New Orleans, Louisiana, right at the edge of the French Quarter. Beautiful. It's happening December 9th, 10th, and 11th this year. We've got some really great speakers. Dries Boitart, the Drupal project lead, founder of the Drupal project. You guys know Dries. He's going to be keynoting this year. And we've got lots of people. The schedule is starting to come together. And you can find out about all of that at doitwithdrupal.com. Doitwithdrupal.com.
It's a big party.
It's a big, big fun thing. Great chance for people sort of who are trying to get their feet wet in Drupal, or even people who are experienced with Drupal, to come and get to kind of brush elbows with the people who are building Drupal. We get people like Earl Miles to come and talk about views, and Moshe Weitzman to come and talk about organic groups, and Karen Stevenson, right here, come talk about CCK, and you know, basically the people who are writing these modules to come and talk about them, give them what we call master classes on their subject of interest, and we also get people from outside the Drupal community who are experts in building communities and web technology and stuff like that to come and talk about those things as well. So it's really focused on sort of pragmatic information for people who are looking to build Drupal sites or are in the process of building Drupal sites. DrupalCon oftentimes is very like theoretical, and this is very practical. So there you go. Do it with Drupal.com. We also have a new video coming out very soon this week called Site Building with Drupal. This is the magnum opus of Lullabot videos. We had a video come out last month called Administering Drupal, which was sort of about if you're it's a video for people who have been like given a Drupal site and want to sort of understand how it works and how they can be the webmaster for this Drupal site. And this video, it focuses much more on sort of building that website, starting from the ground up and building websites with Drupal, and really talks about all of the Drupal terminology and stuff like that. Site building with Drupal, you can find that at store.lullabot.com. And who did that video? That was me and Angie and Addie, right?
Yep.
That's right.
Yeah.
Three Musketeers, baby.
Yes. And that video.
You'll have the battle scars from that.
No, I know.
it was epic.
We sat down to do it, not quite realizing. I mean, I guess well, we kind of knew, but maybe we just sort of ignored it, that it was going to be the Moby Dick. It was going to be the
oh, she blows.
It was going to be the War and Peace of Lullabot learning videos. Yes, it's like 5 hours long, and we're trying to figure out now if it's going to be a double disc or if we can somehow cram it all into one disc. But anyways, store.lullabot.com is where you can find that. In non-Lullabot Drupal news this week, what do we have?
Well, Lisa from the Drupal 7 UX project, who's been working with Mark Bolton on a lot of the Drupal 7 stuff, had a fascinating, fascinating blog post at her blog at disambiguity.com. I think the title of it was Designing for the Wrong Target Audience, or Why Drupal Should Be a Developer Tool and Not a Consumer Product, which is sort of like the Pope saying, I'm having second thoughts about this God thing, in terms of like how a lot of the conversation has gone in the Drupal 7 design project. The gist of her post was not that like user experience and design stuff is unimportant, but that in her work on this project, she started to see that there's like a really difficult split between developers who are building user-facing, you know, products and projects on top of Drupal, and people who are just downloading Drupal and want to use it. And the difficult split is basically Drupal is used as a framework by these developers, but it's also sort of this downloadable product. And a lot of times, if a lot of work is poured into just the Drupal, the downloadable product, it makes it harder for developers to build other kinds of things on top of it, like other kinds of workflows, other ways of editing content that are what's needed for the projects their users want. So it's a really fascinating post, just sort of exploring the tug and, you know, the two different polls that are going on in the Drupal community. And I think it went up yesterday afternoon, and there's like 55 comments, and it crashed her server, and it's back online. I mean, it's
well, it is so, WordPress, so you know.
Posing. But no, I mean, I think it's really fascinating, and I mean, it's definitely like required reading for anybody who's interested in, you know, this stuff that's going on.
Well, it really goes to the question of what is Drupal, and touches on some of the stuff that Jeff, you were talking about in previous podcasts about this sort of small core movement, you know, that Drupal. Currently, what you download with Drupal when you go to Drupal.org is one idea of what Drupal is.
It's a particular product that's been built on this set of tools.
Right. Yeah. And then there's some debate about, well, should people think that that's what Drupal is, or should we even make it a more blank slate, give people nothing, or start with nothing and then focus on distributions and stuff like that. And
I think the consensus that's starting to emerge, knock on wood, is there's always going to have to be a real genuinely useful tool that people can download and start working with. Like, I mean, otherwise, you know, we might as well just say, screw it, we're just making a PHP framework, and you know, there's Cake PHP and there's Django and there's Drupal and stuff like that. The fact that Drupal is actually usable is one of the things that really sets it apart from just frameworks. But I think the thing that's starting to coalesce is this idea that it really is two pieces. It is a product built on top of a framework, and then it's this ecosystem of other products that are also built on it. And it's not so much that we have to, you know, tear all that stuff out, as we have to make sure that this default product that we sort of, you know, give out and sort of sell the idea of Drupal with doesn't paint other people into a corner as they try to build other things with it.
Right. Right. And we've talked a little bit about Small Core, and we're planning on doing a podcast about that at some point in the future. This Small Core movement, which it sort of touches on this from a little bit more of a different angle. It's interesting because Lisa has been tasked with looking at the front end of Drupal, and it seems like she's come to some of the same conclusions that a lot of people who are looking at the back end of Drupal have come to. So,
yeah, I think the whole direction is interesting. I think we need to tread a little carefully, though, because the reason we all do use Drupal is because it's both a framework and a product. It's not because it's a great framework, because it's not. I mean, it is in respects, but if you want a framework, you're going to download Cake or Rails or whatever. And it's not a great product, because if you want a great product, you download WordPress. And yet, we have all these people using it, all these people working on it, all these people collaborating together. And something I really thought was interesting about the whole Drupal 7, drive to increase usability, we learned a lot, but one thing that it's caused is called a shift in the way that developers do features and stuff like that. I mean, it's not a dramatic shift yet, but we're starting to see things like things will be marked needs work if they are screwing up the UI, and we make sure that we get somebody from the usability team chiming in on anything that affects the UI so that we're not adding stupid options and stuff like that. And actually developers and usability people working together on features for core to sort of design them out and ensure that they're proper and stuff like that. So that's something I'd like to not lose.
Oh, no. I mean, that kind of culture shift is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we just got to be careful when we say stuff like, Drupal core will just be a bunch of include files and then people will just make distributions, because when people just make distributions, you don't get that sort of centralized mass of activity and education and mentoring happening, because it's all happening in little pockets.
Yeah.
Well, got to make sure, that we...
To some extent, this is sort of, what we probably want to talk about on the Small Core podcast. But I think if ironing out how exactly as a community we want to get to our end destination of being able to have an efficient core that people can build products on top of and a usable distribution that works for people when they just want to download it and say, okay, what can I do with Drupal? I think, the details of how to iron those things out without killing the good things that have developed is, that's the hard work that follows.
Yep.
Yeah. And we will get more into that in a future podcast. Drupal 7 freeze on the horizon. Angie Byron,
yep.
Adrenaline pumping.
Adrenaline pumping, sleep not happening, all that, yeah.
For people that are new to the podcast or new to Drupal, Angie is the Drupal 7 co-maintainer, co-lead. She's the queen of Drupal 7.
That's one way to put it, yeah. Yeah, so basically, code freeze for real this time is Thursday, October 15th, in X hours, and no, I'm just kidding. We're basically down to the wire here for any new features. Features shut off actually about a month and a half ago, but what we're shooting for is to finish up all the specific exceptions that we made to the feature freeze, kind of the high impact features that we really wanted to get in. And so far we're doing okay on that. We've got all of the image handling stuff in core now, which is awesome. And we've got a new dashboard module. So basically the front page of the admin section, you have a couple of, regions and you can drag and drop things. Little blocks into there and stuff to set up your own sort of custom view of your site, which is cool. There's also been a lot of work on the field API, making taxonomy actual field and making fields translatable. So we've been doing a bunch of work on those types of packages. And then there's a bunch of D7 UX stuff that's pretty close, but not quite there yet. I'm hoping that comes together in the next couple days. And then there's also the other major initiative going on right now is plugin.php, now called authorize.php or something, where basically what it is it's the ability to install and update modules through your web browser instead of having to use FTP.
Whoa.
And yeah, and that has just gotten a flurry of activity in the last like 2 weeks. So I'm like holding my breath to see if that makes it through. But Derek Wright and Jacob Singh are both working really hard on that. And yeah, anyway, it's just a big, crazy thing. Everybody's working on that stuff. And then we're also trying to get in last minute API cleanups and blah. But anyway, and so once that happens, then we'll focus more on usability and getting the help text and other types of, you know, stuff ready so that in mid-November, we're going to do a UI freeze, which means all the strings are the way they need to be, all the graphics and the forms and all this kind of stuff are all kind of set in stone. And then the documentation team can work on, you know, what they need to do. And then we just hash out critical bugs until release. Hooray.
Cool. I won't even ask when release is because I...
Yeah, well, people do ask, and the answer is it's done when it's done.
Well, we already had that on the last podcast, didn't we?
We
did our predictions, yeah.
Yeah, we did do our predictions. That's true.
So don't even pretend like you don't have a podcast. Prediction.
And then, this seems to be the theme of this podcast, but in a future podcast, we're going to do a Drupal 7 specific podcast once Drupal 7 comes out. But this podcast is about something totally different. This podcast is about screwing up Drupal.
Well, goodness, with a promise like that.
Yeah, well, here you go. How to screw up Drupal in 10 steps or less. So let's get started on that. So why? I mean,
what do you mean by screwing up Drupal?
Well, what is it about Drupal that makes it screw upable? I mean, shouldn't it just be?
Well, everything that is new that you learn is screw upable.
I screwed up Adobe PageMill.
I mean, I screw up Microsoft Word, you know, like.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess anything that's sort of flexible. I think that there's that flexibility aspect to it. The sort of open source nature of it means that you can get and install all sorts of semi-experimental kinds of things that are poorly documented and might not mention that they're experimental or were never planned.
Or the developer might not realize they're experimental. as is the case with a number of my modules.
I don't know. I thought it was a sound concept.
It seems to work-ish.
Works-ish. Good. Yeah. That should be a categorization on Drupal.org. Modules that work-ish.
I like it.
Yeah, I think it's an issue whenever you get into anything where there's more than one way to do something. You know, Drupal tries to give you as many options as possible for making your site do whatever crazy things you can think of, which is awesome when you are more advanced and you kind of know what all of those things are and when they're best used and stuff like that. But when you don't, it's really easy to, you know, pick some thing that you just learned about, like, say, blocks, and say, okay, great. Everything's going to be a block. I get this now, you know, and stuff like that. When, you know, without knowing the other tools in your toolbox, you know, you can sort of fixate on the hammer and start trying to mash in screws with it and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a really good, not only a really good visual analogy, but yeah, I mean, I think that there's certainly that. I think that there's so much sort of vernacular around Drupal that I think that just sort of understanding the glossary of terms, you start getting through it and you're like, oh, I get this, you know, and then you start building stuff out with what you know, not quite realizing the whole picture.
Okay. So like what mistakes have we actually made? Like,
oh boy,
for reals. Like, because, well, you know, like Drupal people getting together and talking about how it's easy to screw up Drupal is like, you know, it's a group hobby, you know, but like for real, like, well, beyond all kinds of hand waving, like what have we done?
My first Drupal website was all about taxonomy. I took a long time trying to figure out what taxonomy was, and once I'd figured it out, I was damn well going to use that knowledge for everything. Everything that had a drop-down list or a checkbox or any kind of options on anything, taxonomy. And of course, this was before CCK was out, so it did make a little, it was the hammer we had, but yeah, I mean, it was just...
Well, I mean, I did the same thing. I remember like building taxonomies, like for lists of price ranges, you know, the whole thing. It's like, and I realized, oh man, I'm really going to do like, you know, 1 cent increments in taxonomy terms. And this just starts feeling horrible. But like, you know, you realize, oh, I can categorize stuff, and like taxonomy module gives me listing pages, and this is perfect. And you know, but it gets tricky fast. I would actually go so far as to say that that's a general problem of like, using the one module you really understand for everything. You know, it's like, oh, I got views module. I finally got it working. You know, I'll be darned if I'm not going to use it to make, you know, drop-down lists now. You know, and it, I mean, sometimes certain things like that work, but it's like, it's something that you see happen in various areas where somebody will figure out a module and just, like, beat that sucker to death.
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. This is going to be the module. Drupal Confessions podcast, you know.
What's your Drupal confession, Angie?
I don't know yet. I'm still a little shy, but something we should probably talk about is like what so now that we don't use taxonomy for everything, what do we do? Like, do we there's when do we use solutions. CCK? That's... when do we use taxonomy? Like, what's that?
Oh, there's a million options. That's the beauty of Drupal.
Are we going to provide solutions in this podcast too? I don't know that I have solutions.
I think the takeaway for that is probably just, you know, if you figured out something that works, you know, that's awesome. But when you start running into those, this feels like it. Yeah, this, I don't know about this, but I understand it. You know, it. Start asking around. Start hunting around, you know, stuff, and just investigate, because someone might have figured out something that's more appropriate for the task you're trying to do.
In general, I would say that CCK and CCK solutions. So CCK, when you download CCK, it doesn't include all of the fields. Some of which are very popular, like file field and image field, are very popular. And in fact, as Angie was saying earlier, most of the image field stuff has gotten into core for Drupal 7. It's just that popular. And it doesn't actually come when you download CCK for Drupal 6, it doesn't actually come with image field. But CCK and that way of thinking, I think, solves a lot of the problems that
it's also a lot more, it's also a lot closer to like classic, you know, development website building concepts. You know, you're building out your data model and then you figure out how you present it. So it forces you into a lot more structured approaches to certain things. Whereas, you know, some of the alternatives to CCK can be kind of, you know, here's your bag of stuff, do stuff.
Another thing that one of the first things that I ran into was I was trying to figure out how to get kind of a traditional hierarchy. I had a website that had a hierarchy.
Oh, the hierarchy.
I was trying to figure out how to get that into Drupal, and in Drupal, you know, you just get all these pages and they don't connect to anything. And so I started looking at taxonomy, and that is actually one of the good things about taxonomy is when you want something that will give you a hierarchy, taxonomy does that. And then I realized the book module also does that, and it's one of the funny things is that actually became one of my early ways of constructing a website was out of the book module because it had a hierarchy and it had a first and a next
and it makes sense. As somebody who used to do like tons of websites, you know, we had HTML pages and we had folders. Hierarchy is just baked into how websites are built in my head for, you know, so many years.
Well, and you need to think about it as whether this is actually classifying. You can kind of go back to semantics with it. It's sort of, is this actually something that's classifying this piece of content? Is it, you know, are you actually categorizing it? Or is it, you know, information about how it should be presented or something like that? I mean, you can kind of fall back on that kinds of stuff.
We should just totally like ask an information architect and like a library science person on the podcast and just let them fight for like
I, I think another solution around this, and this is sort of generalized, and we'll probably refer back to CCK and views a lot throughout this podcast, but understanding how views works is also really helpful in architecting your site. Another mistake that I know I made was not in the process of overusing taxonomy, I was underusing node types.
Oh yeah.
And so I would have one node type that had all these fields, and it was like, well, if it's an image, then put an image in, but don't fill out this other part of it, because that's for if it's a video, you know, then you put the video link in. It's a, you know, and using taxonomy to classify between them, when really I probably should have had different content types and then used views to.
And then you needed different permissions, and suddenly you needed taxonomy-based access control, and the world turned to ash.
Oh, God. Oh, God, no. Yeah. No,
but no, yeah, it's not either not having enough or not or having too many different node types. It's like the node system is such a nice tool that we have, and figuring out the sweet spot for what you're doing on your site is important. And that actually, that's one of my dark confessions. One of the things that I, like, a couple of early sites that I did, and this was like when CC, well, no, actually, this was when FlexiNode was the hot stuff. So this is like, there was a whole world of pain when it came for me to upgrade, but my thing was, I built out, like, a bunch of different node types, and a bunch of custom fields, and, like, the whole structure and everything, just sort of on the fly. I just, like, ad-libbed it with, like, six node types, and a bajillion FlexiNode fields, and I didn't really plan it out. You know, I didn't have so much as like a napkin with some scribbles on it. And I was just like, oh, I'll figure this out as I go. And wow, that was just absolute pain, because, you know, I mean, it's like four content types and 30 fields in, you realize, oh, wait a minute, maybe this should be over here. And, you know, just taking the time to like get out a piece of notepaper and just work out some of the things you're about to do can save so much pain.
So let's quickly define some of these terms. You're talking about FlexiNode, assuming that some people listening to this might be might be new. FlexiNode was a predecessor to CCK, and CCK stands for the Content Construction Kit. And both of these things are about adding extra fields, basically, to your content types. And a content type in Drupal is often referred to as a node or a node type. And so if you wanted to add an image or a date or even potentially some like location kinds of information, you could conceivably use CCK to add extra fields, and this has sort of become a more recent focus of Drupal, and with Drupal 6 and Drupal 7, much if not all of CCK is getting into core, so it will be part of what people download when they download Drupal for the first time.
Woohoo!
So another big part of this is just like concepting. So the node types, you need to like think about. Plan out how you're going to build your site.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, my first site, I sort of, you know, I like tried to do it piecemeal, like, okay, I'll, you know, sit here and work on this part. Oh, now what? Oh, that's shiny over there. Let me do that. And I was like basically creating all of these node types and fields all over the place. And it was funny because if I had like stopped and actually like took a piece of paper and actually wrote out, okay, this is the data I want to track, these are the fields that I need people to be able to fill in, and then group them before I started, I would have saved so much time, because what's not fun at all is populating 300 pieces of content and then figuring out, oh no, I forgot to add one field, or I forgot to set this option in the content type screen, and you know, this kind of thing, and then you have to go back and redo that again, you know, for so many things.
It just, or even worse, I've entered it all in and then I realize this field should actually be on a different content type.
Yeah, totally. And then you are totally screwed. But you know, like, yeah, that kind of stuff. So with Drupal, and much more so than, you know, you know, when you're building static HTML pages, you just like copy and paste it to a new place and you're done. But, you know, with Drupal, it does pay to like sit there and just actually think about it, what you want to track in your site before you even get into implementation details of whether it's CCK or taxonomy or whatever.
But come on, it's so much fun to just download all those contrib modules.
that is mistake. That's the next mistake.
That was my first, my brain exploded in rubbery chunks with Drupal. Because I was like, oh, wow, they have this, and there's that, and there's this, and I turned them all on in one go. I checked off every single one.
I did that,
one,
too.
And
everything
then I was like,
blows up.
Oh, cow. my head hurt for a while.
Well, I mean, and then you got to figure out how to turn them all back off again.
Right, and then it's like, I didn't know what I had done, like which module had actually done what, so then you turn it off, and you're like, but wait,
you don't know where the...
coming from.
You don't know where that functionality came from. Is that part of Drupal, what's built into Drupal, or there's now a new field on all of my whatever?
And then, and especially like when there's like, you want to do something, and there's like three different modules that sort of all sort of do the same thing, so you download all three of them, and turn them all on,
at the same time.
And it's just like... No, one at a time. Because then
which
you have
of the 19 modules that I just enabled is turning my screen pink? I don't know.
It's true. What was funny, too, because when we did usability testing, you know, people who get confused will go to the modules page and be like, well, I'll just turn everything on because I can't make a decision here. And then what they've just done is they just give them themselves hundreds of more options that they didn't have before to be confused by. So, yeah, the name of the game with modules is one at a time. And, you know, like, click a module on, see what it does, evaluate if it's worth for you, and then shut it off if it's not something you want to use, because otherwise it's sitting there on every single page being processed and all this kind of stuff.
And actually, don't even just shut it off. Uninstall it.
Yeah, yeah.
Get rid of all the crap that it added.
So I think that there's my advice to new people is that there's two processes. One is experimenting with Drupal, and we certainly want to encourage people to do that. We're running these online workshops now where we give people sandbox Drupal installations, and we encourage them to just play with it, like turn things on, see what happens, you know, create content, create blocks, kind of, and we give them exercises to try and build certain things. But that's a different process than sitting down to architect your Drupal site. I think that oftentimes people need to kind of do both of these at once, but there probably should be, at least in your mind, sort of a differentiation between experimenting with Drupal and sort of playing with it. And
they should be different sites because
I made that mistake at the beginning, experimenting
on my good site.
Yep, totally.
Trying to figure out how to undo what I had done.
Yeah.
Have a scratch site. Always have a scratch site.
Yeah,
either locally or just another, you know, like a subdomain or another site that you have on your shared host or whatever it is. But yeah, trying to undo all of that experimentation is never the same.
Yeah. I mean, Drupal is cheap. It's virtually free. And we have videos on lullabot.com about how to install it and just install it multiple versions, multiple, you know, installations. You can install it locally on your computer. We definitely recommend doing that. It's free as compared to, you know, paying for different virtual hostings and having different, Drupal installations to just mess with on the server. If you can mess with it locally, that's a really good way to go. And then, yeah, sort of keep them separate, your kind of testing site, especially when you're thinking about installing something that you heard about and maybe can't tell if you're downloading the right one that people were actually talking about, or maybe it was the one that people were talking about. Don't use that one, and you're going to install it on your live site to try and find out if it actually solves your problem or not. Install it locally first and experiment with it on your experimentation site. Yeah.
So how do you pick a contrib module? I mean, you go in there, if you don't want to download 150,000,
in the olden days, it was pretty brutal. We at least have some good metrics now to go on to say, are other people actually using this and stuff like that?
Yep. Yeah, I mean there are on the module pages. Where are they now? The links to find out some of the metrics.
Every module.
Go to download. You see the big download tab on Drupal.org.
But for instance, for pending patches, report a security issue, view usage statistics. There you go. And you can see that, for instance, views module is used by about 150,000 websites right now, which makes it very popular.
That's a lot more than pirate module.
A few people are using it.
Yeah.
So
there's that. The other thing that I made a big mistake about when I first used Drupal is I used Google or Drupal search or whatever, and I tried to find all the modules that sounded like what they were going to do. You know, like I wanted an event calendar, so I'm going to find event. Great. And I want an image gallery, so I'm going to download acid-free gallery. Awesome. And the thing is, when you kind of do that in a vacuum, you're basically working off keywords and stuff like that. So you're getting the modules with good namespaces, but those might not necessarily be the best modules to solve your problem.
Oftentimes they were the first modules, which oftentimes also means that now they're version one.
They're a little dated,
and we might be up to version 12, where people have just rewritten it from scratch and called it something totally different than.
As the owner of two abandoned modules, one named Comic and one named Webcomic, I can say that is very, very true.
Yeah.
Just because you have a good name doesn't mean your module doesn't suck.
So a really good thing with Drupal is to talk to people. Go to your local Drupal meetup. Find your Drupal meetup. Go to groups.drupal.org and try and find a group near you. You can post messages on groups.drupal.org, particularly there's like special interest groups around certain things, and you can post messages there. There's the Drupal forums where you can post questions. There's the IRC channels are a good place to find people.
DrupalCon, do it with Drupal,
yep.
Conference, yeah. All those are good places to just ask people, what the heck would I use to do XYZ?
It's good to just kind of check in, and because what you'll find is people say, oh, yeah, I spent about 3 days trying that module that you're talking about, and oh, man, it's not nearly as good as the solution that I'm using now, and blah, 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 blah.
Category module.
And it's like, oh, it would be, you've just saved yourselves 3 days worth of time by, going and finding some people to talk to. So
If you go to drupal.org/cases, another thing that's cool is they've got a bunch of basically case studies people have written up about whatever sites that they've tried to build. So if you go kind of page through there and find a site that's similar to what you want to do, they'll always have the module list of what they use, as well as some interesting details about how they did how they did the project, how they got the pages to look the way they should, and all that kind of stuff.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
And another thing I would say, in terms of making mistakes, is taking the time to ask questions before you start implementing a solution is way worth it. Because if you, and I've done this, and we've probably all done this, where I said, okay, I think this is the way to go. And I go down that path, and I've got stuff created, and I've done a lot of work. And then somewhere along the line, I realize this was the wrong direction to go. And then you got to rewind.
It's worth
taking time to ask some questions ahead of time and avoid that.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. Drupal is very flexible, but it also means that you can, in fact, walk down, cul-de-sacs. This metaphor was going
somewhere. It's like a mammoth cave with all those little places you can go.
And there are grues.
Well, the other thing too about that is that, if you just download Drupal and use it in a vacuum, then you just got a piece of software for free, in air quotes. But if you actually talk to the community, one of the advantages of an open source product is that you have access to these 300,000 other people that know this product or framework. And so You know, you can talk to them and they, you know, have solved some of the same problems you're trying to solve. And, you know, the biggest frustration people have with Drupal is usually, you know, they'll come in IRC and they'll say, Drupal sucks and I can't figure it out. This, you know, and you find out what they've done is they've downloaded it and then they went off into a corner for 2 weeks and tried to bash their face against the table. And then they came back and said, my face hurts. Drupal sucks. But if they just would have asked somebody, it would be much, much happier.
I recommend a softer table.
Or a cake, between your face and the table.
Yes, or perhaps a pillow.
Messy but delicious. That's wonderful.
Cake pillow.
Especially if it's raspberry creamy, you know.
There are also, I mean, there's lots of, well, you could listen to this podcast. By listening to this podcast, you're already halfway there. There's books. We have a book. There are much more books now than there were when I started with Drupal. Our book, just so that we fully sell our book in this podcast, our book is called Using Drupal. It's written by pretty much everybody on this podcast. I think, Karen, you started with Lullabot after we finished the book. But
you wrote the software we talked about.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there you go. So you had your part. It's an O'Reilly book, Understanding Drupal. No, Using Drupal. I get that.
And actually, if you look back through older podcasts, we have podcasts also on top 40 modules, and those are some other ways of getting some information.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I think one of the interesting things is, you know, we made some sort of back of the napkin, you know, scribbles about our horrible mistakes as we were, you know, starting this off. But I think one of them ties in with that, you know, ask questions, learn a bit, and you'll thank yourself later. Well, one of the things that ties in with that is just learning some of the basic terminology. Like, what are the pieces that I have to work with as I start building a Drupal site? Things like, what constitutes a page in Drupal? What's a node? That's not made any easier by the fact that there are page nodes in Drupal that are different than like what you might think of as a page, but that's another matter. But like, you know, blocks, comments, terms, you know, what's a module versus like, you know, just a feature, you know, or, you know, what is the theme and where does it play in? Just understanding some of the basic terminology that'll get tossed around a lot when you ask somebody, how do I do X or Y, or when you look at instructions, or even when you're messing around in Drupal's user interface, just getting that sort of basic terminology and getting and understanding where it fits in will save you a world of frustration.
I have to say, though, trying to figure out what a node was, like, I clearly remember, like, looking at the screen going, what is a node? And I spent, like, half a day at work, like, trying to figure out what a node was. And, like, I read the definition, and I kind of kept looking at it. And I didn't really actually get what a node was until I actually started just using it a little bit. Like, that was really one of those experimentation things, and then a light bulb went off like a few days later for me. But that was just me.
I have a theory that nodes only make sense to two groups of people. One are people who like are math heads and like set theory, and the others are people who've tried to code up a CMS that let them have different kinds of things that they could all list on the same page at once.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again,
they call it nodes. Okay, whatever.
Again, books, videos, all these things will. There are lots of them that will explain the terminology around Drupal. And I think by understanding, trying to get a well-rounded understanding of the terminology of Drupal will also, in the process, sort of give you a well-rounded knowledge of Drupal. I mean, just sort of at least what's out there, so that you won't end up building your whole website on taxonomy. Just because that's the only actual term that you figured out, you know.
It's a fine module, but not the only one.
Yes, well, I've learned since then. So there's also lots of mistakes that can be made coding. I think these are we've sort of talked about like configuration and sort of concepting mistakes, but people will. Particularly people with PHP programming experience will hop in and say, I know how to do this. I know how to grep. I can grep for this word or this the word that's in the functionality that I want to change. If I just search for login, I can find all the mentions of login, and I can just go change the way that the login on my site works and make it work the way that it should. Yeah,
even people who don't know PHP, because that's where I was learning PHP and Drupal at the same time, and that was interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I did some really, really weird things.
Well, you know what's funny, though, is I had about, I don't know, 8 or 10 years of PHP experience before I hit Drupal, and I would say that wasn't a picnic either, because I knew I had all these tricks for how I did everything, and then coming into Drupal, it was like, what? You know, I can't just do echo something. It breaks my whole site. I have to do Drupal set message, and, you know, this kind of stuff, and it was like, it was hard. I mean, part of it, too, was that, you know, in school, they don't really prepare you for looking at other people's code because that's cheating. So, you know, I come into this thing, and I'm like, why on earth would they ever have done it like that? You know, and it just took a long time to... You know, when you're used to writing everything from scratch and you come to this whole idea of a framework and you're trying to get, you're basically trying to get your head in what other developers' heads were,
and
you know,
and philosophy. And yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. And it's tricky, man.
And, you know, Drupal has a strong tendency to document features and to document functions, but not to document the philosophy that led to particular ways of doing things, which can make it really brutal for that.
See, I was so beyond, like, philosophy wouldn't have meant anything to me. Like, I didn't understand, like, what a function was, what a PHP function was. But I was like, so my very first code experience in Drupal was, I had a site I was building out, and I had to do some stuff for, like, people had to do payments for registration for an event. And so I created a PHP node, and I learned Form API, and I coded it directly in there. I essentially wrote, like, a 600, 800 line module in a PHP node. And, like, I didn't even understand what a function was to encapsulate what I was doing. And so I would, like, repeat, like, the same thing.
Do not delete this node.
Like, I didn't even get, like, loops and stuff like that. Like, so, like, I would actually, like, literally, like, if there were 10 things, like, I would just, like, create, a function for each one of them and stuff. Like, it was nightmarish. It was totally. And then I'd use a Drupal go-to at the end to pass that information to another PHP node.
Oh,
which would then process
cute.
It.
Nice.
It was sexy.
But yeah, I guess, you know, it is true. You shouldn't be scared of modules. Like, modules sound scary and like, oh, no, it's okay. I just edit in little box here and that's okay.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, in terms of sustainability, it's so much better to do stuff like that in a module, and there's really nothing different between a module and a PHP node other than it's on the file. Well, there's a lot different, but...
Yeah. But like, yeah, and I went to my first Drupal meetup, and I was telling them that I was learning the Form API to do this custom stuff I had to do, and they were just like, oh, so you know, you're doing a module, and I was like, no. And they looked at me like I had two heads, like, why are you doing Form API, but you still haven't done a module?
I
was just terrified of the concept. I was just terrified of the concept of a module. I was like, oh, I don't know how to do that. You know, and it was just like, because I just never actually just stepped back to look at what was involved. And it's like, oh, you just have to kind of create some files, name them a certain way, and put a little meta information. And then it's the same thing. And it's like, oh. But yeah, so I was just terrified because it seemed like that was like a hardcore developer world to make a module. And I was way not that. So that was like outside of my purview. And that was a really bad mistake.
So we should mention the biggest mistake of all, though. The biggest coding mistake mm-hmm. of all.
Yeah.
And why, I keep saying this, but I know every time I bring it up, Angie says, why haven't you submitted a patch? But I do not understand why at the top of every single code, every page, every module, function, every single file in Drupal core, there's not a comment that says, do not hack this file. Because we all talk about it. We don't hack core is what we say.
We should have a little, the comment should say, don't hack core, and then have a link to an explanation.
That's exactly what I think it should say. But of course, I talk about it. I don't actually do
anything
about it.
Hey, Jeff, file a patch.
I know.
Can that still get in before Thursday?
It probably.
That can get in up until release. Although I'm not sure. I'll have to think about it. I get what you're saying.
It's a comment, so it's documentation. So it's good up until
documentation. Woo! Yeah, anyways, so the saying is, "Don't hack core." Anybody want to define what that means?
It means that Drupal core, like the files that you actually get when you download Drupal and like the modules that it comes with are actually being maintained by the people that build Drupal. And when new versions come out, you want to be able to upgrade to them. You don't want to have to go find all your little modifications that you've made and stuff like that. And Drupal provides lots of APIs so that as a developer, you can build new functionality and change existing behaviors by writing your own plugin rather than going in and mucking around with Drupal's files. And if you hack Drupal core files, you don't know whether you're breaking other modules that assume that things work the normal way, stuff like that. It's just, it's a world of pain.
You've also created your own personal version of Drupal.
In a bad way.
Which means that when the next security release comes out of Drupal, you need to, keep track of all your changes and then make sure that you implement your changes exactly the same way in the new version of Drupal and stuff like that. So Drupal tries, again, talking about the philosophy, Drupal tries to allow for these kind of fundamental changes to everything from the way that forms work, the way that Drupal functions, even changing, being able to change the words on the page, all that kind of stuff is all part of the Drupal API. You have to go the long way around, but you'll be much more future-proof.
That's important, not just for developers, but if you're hiring a developer, you want to make sure that the person you're hiring is not hacking core on your behalf.
Yes.
It's really important.
I've paid this person to mess up my Drupal.
Yeah. But it's a paradigm shift, though, because other PHP-based CMSs have whole communities dedicated to them around hacks, they call them. So, like, there's PHP BB hacks, where it's a forum where people share, okay, on line 764 of config.inc, if you change this line to this line, then you have, Xbox gamer tags next to everybody's name or whatever, like this kind of stuff. And
in WordPress, that was the world I was used to. And in WordPress, it was like you just have to, I hacked WordPress all the time. Like that was how you did stuff. So I was totally used to that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's even that philosophy. I mean, I think with maybe some of these other ones, it's about you're building your website and then you're done. And if a new version of PHP BB comes out or something like that, it's like, oh, well, I built mine with the old version. That sort of hacking philosophy kind of gets built in. But I think with Drupal, there's this idea of, people trying to stay in sync, the developer community trying to sort of feed back into each of the individual websites with security updates and, not necessarily, full version updates. Full version updates are still a bit of a major change for a website, but and certainly as we see in Drupal 7, there are all these new features and stuff which everyone would love to have on their website. You're certainly not going to get there if you have a hugely hacked version of Drupal 6. You're going to have
this actually brings up an interesting point, though, because we talk about you gotta use plugins and modules to add these features instead of hacking Drupal core. But in order to do that, you have to you can't just firehose PHP. You have to actually play with the rest of Drupal, which means that you have to start learning how to use Drupal-specific functions and use the APIs that Drupal provides rather than just building your functionality with straight PHP and MySQL. There's some stuff that you can write yourself, obviously, like, logic, is all going to be yours, but, learning the Drupal APIs, learning to do functions like node load instead of just pulling stuff straight out of the database, or using the access control system that Drupal provides so that other modules can play nicely with it rather than trying to just roll your own, stick a cookie in and check for that,
you just need to become familiar with the tool set. Drupal actually has a really rich tool set, and it's like those aha moments when it's like, oh, you mean I didn't have to actually write all of this myself in PHP? Like there's a single function in Drupal that simply does this for me.
Or a module out there that oftentimes gets you close. And that idea of, either writing another module to alter the module that you downloaded so that you've at least, you know, you're at least mostly using the functionality of a common module that's out there. A common mistake is rewriting a module that's out there already. Oftentimes you can, you know, think about it. Is, again, looking at Drupal as a very open platform, is the functionality that you're looking for the same kind of functionality that other people who are using this module are also going to look for? In that case, you'd be much better off just adding this functionality and then submitting it as a patch for the original module. And seeing if that module developer is interested in adding your patch, or you might even check in with them before you write it, and submit an issue saying, hey, I was thinking about writing this functionality. Is this something that you would commit to the module? And then you can know that you can get your code into their module, and then they're maintaining your module for you, and you don't have to maintain it. And when the new version of Drupal comes out, the community tends to upgrade these modules, and you can have the new version of your functionality for your new website without needing to write that yourself.
That's a beautiful thing.
Philosophically, yeah. I mean, it's a fair amount of juggling and communication and stuff like that. But ultimately, I think it really pays off in very sort of tangible monetary kinds of ways. So,
but I would definitely say that was one of my early mistakes, was thinking I had to write a module to do everything I needed it to do. You know, any specific thing I had to have, well, I guess I must need to write a module, and that was wrong.
Yeah.
And a waste of my time.
Yeah, yeah. And well, and again, as we talk about what I call, I keep calling them different things, but I call these meta modules, these sort of building block modules like Views and CCK, you don't necessarily need to create specific modules for some of these things. You can oftentimes piece them together. There's an article that Jeff Eaton wrote on lullabot.com about sort of a recipe he had for photo galleries using basically CCK and Views. And there are all these photo gallery modules out there for Drupal, but it's much more flexible to build it almost from scratch using CCK and Views. And now with newer technologies like features, we talked about on a previous podcast as well, someone has created a feature to do just that recipe that Jeff had said. So basically you can just install this feature and it automatically puts together the stuff that you need for the gallery. So
and there's Views Gallery, which I created, which is his recipe.
There you go.
But it's
right.
Basically in a module. It's just the glue and all the configuration. It doesn't have its own logic. It uses the logic of all those other modules. Just glues them together. So I think there are a lot of glue modules out there, getting to be more and more glue modules, and I think that's a good way to go a lot of times.
Yeah, yeah, kind of keep it light and sort of based on the APIs. I think another really good lesson for new Drupal people, I mean, to some extent, this is just a good lesson for programmers, web programmers in particular, but people new to Drupal, is that like anything is what I call crazy logic. Like stuff that's really difficult for you to think about in your head and put together the logic in your head usually relates to stuff that is difficult for the database, you know, the functionality, the PHP layer, Drupal, to do as well. And so if you're concerned about the performance implications of something like looking at all of a user's friends, favorite items and the common taxonomies between them, and running it through an algorithm to recommend the things that you would probably find to be the most favorite for yourself on every page load every time, might slow your site down a little bit.
And even just possibly,
and you know, even if you implement it with CCK and Views without writing it from scratch, or if you write it from scratch, it can be sort of performance problematic. Drupal does a really lot of great things with caching layers, and you can do some interesting things with caching these types of things. But as you're sort of thinking about and architecting your site, and the client is starting to ask for some of these things that are, again, what I call crazy logic, just kind of think about that.
Like, realistically, you know, just testing it and seeing if it's slow. And yeah, we totally don't have time to go into it, but there are tools out there that let you do things like pound a site with, you know, 50 test users, you know, simulated and stuff like that, and just see how it performs. Learning even just a couple of those tools and experimenting with them while you're in the development process can flush out what those hot spots are. Because if you don't know what's slow, you can't make it fast.
Who can talk quickly about coding security?
My first module was called Comment Module. It was features from Book Module, Image Module, and Forum Module shamelessly ripped out and then wrapped in four security holes.
What was the module called?
Comic.
Comic. Oh, I see.
It was actually the
not
module.
It's just web comic. Yeah.
Yes. In a nutshell, the three things that I did are, awesomely enough, the three things that you should never do. One, I was just building strings of SQL and running them in my module, which meant that, you know, I was taking user input and building up SQL queries, and if somebody had typed in some sort of disastrous thing like, you know, drop table users into a field that I was using to build stuff, it could have nuked my entire database. So I wasn't using Drupal's SQL, you know, safe SQL escaping functions like dbQuery. Also, I was taking raw user input and I was then outputting it later without doing any kind of filtering. So if somebody had entered in data and, say, you know, put in JavaScript or something like that into the comic that they were creating, they could have completely compromised, you know, people's browsers or whatever with, you know, all sorts of nefarious JavaScript. And then as an added extra bonus, the way that I was setting it up, I had like bypassed a bunch of other Drupal functionality due to like deleting and reordering of comics, but I wasn't really doing effective like user access checks. So it was possible for people who shouldn't have had permission to do things just to go in and, like, you know, muck around with a web comic that somebody else had created. So like I just totally hit the trifecta of security holes with my first Drupal module. It's awesome.
Well, people don't even know that Drupal has this, and maybe they're new to multi-user websites and the idea that someone who is untrusted could get in there and start mucking around. I think that coming from a blogging background, the security is sort of a binary kind of a thing. There's either you're logged in and then you have permission to do things, or you're not logged in. And the idea that someone could be logged in but not have permission to do everything, including dropping all of your database or editing other people's content or something like that can conceivably be a new concept.
So in a nutshell, all of the stuff that I did wrong can be summarized and prevented if you go to drupal.org/writing-secure-code. The Drupal like security team has built an awesome set of tutorial pages that explain in like real step-by-step, you know, form how to not do those horrible things I did.
Right.
Yep. Right on.
There's lots of mistakes around theming, and I've certainly made them. I think theming, it's important to just sort of understand philosophically the philosophy around theming, that it's the presentation of your website, and you shouldn't be inserting a whole lot of functionality in there and calling the database directly from your theme and stuff like that.
Oh,
I was just going to say, the biggest thing that we run into when we inherit sites from other people is because the theme layer, at least the default one that comes with Drupal core, is PHP-based, there's really nothing at all stopping you from making your TPL.php files 7,000 lines long and doing queries out to databases and doing all kinds of other stuff to format the things on the page. So this is really more of a sort of a Zen practice thing that you just kind of have to, you know, force upon yourself to keep those kind of things out of template files and hopefully out of the theme altogether, and keep the separation between a module puts stuff on a page and the theme styles the stuff on the page.
Yeah, you shouldn't be adding functionality in your theme. So let's talk about some sort of like project mistakes that are sort of at the project level, the project management level, at the planning
stage.
So we've
talked about building sites and writing code, and now it's like, you know, you've got the site. How did you go wrong?
Yeah, exactly. Once you've actually finished the site, looking back, going, huh, next time we're going to write it out on a napkin first and maybe make some sketches of what this site is going to be like ahead of time. So who wants to start in with this concept?
Well, my first site that like somebody actually said, hey, can you make a Drupal site for me? Yeah, I can make a Drupal site. The big thing that I look back on with just sadness is I said the words, well, I really don't know if you want to go with this CCK module. It's really new and it just hasn't proven itself. It could be really flaky and you don't want to get orphaned with something like that. So I ended up writing a bunch of custom modules that like made node types like news. Oh man. Fail. But
well, so keeping in touch with the community and what the community is using to build solutions is a good thing to do.
Or even just like predicting where things are going.
Yeah.
Because like at the time,
being psychic, that's an important part of being a Drupal developer.
I didn't say project mistakes were hard to make. But yeah, keeping in mind, at least, that you probably will make some of those mistakes and, you know, trying to at least have a plan in the back of your head. So, what might I do, you know, in a year if I ended up having to change X or if this module turns out to be not such a good idea? You know, you can't plan for everything, but, like, just sort of keeping a little bit of a big picture of some alternatives in your mind in case.
Yeah. Well, you have to upgrade your Drupal site to a major version once every 2-3 years or so anyway. So, you know, that's always a good time for all those, oh, thank God, now I can clean up all this stuff, the way I was implementing the site.
Well, just the concept on it, like for me, really winding back to when I started like Drupal, because Drupal, like I had sort of used WordPress some and built some sites out and stuff, but I didn't really start like getting into building sites for other people and stuff until I hit Drupal. And like just conceptually, the idea of actual future maintenance period was new to me. Because like, you know, you do static HTML pages and then they just stay there forever and ever.
Yeah.
And it's fine. But the idea that like, oh, you might need to be doing upgrades at some point. You know, like you don't just build the site and just walk away from it. Like that was a completely new concept to me. Just stopping to think about that. Was like a major breakthrough for me as well.
Looking at it as a web application, and the new version of Photoshop comes out, and you want that too, you know. And when you start thinking about it, is Drupal as a web application? Yeah, you might want to upgrade it in the future. You don't necessarily need to. It might in the same way that Photoshop might be cost prohibitive to upgrade. It might be cost prohibitive for you to upgrade to the next version of Drupal, but there's going to be new versions in the future. Just keep that in mind. And in the same way, as you're thinking about whether this is your personal website or you know, you're building the website for The Economist, you need to figure out all of the possibilities of how this website might be used in the future. I think a mistake that I certainly made in planning my first Drupal website was not spending a longer time interviewing the client to find out all of the things that they might be doing in the future or were in their list of possibilities and stuff like that. Not that you necessarily need to create those that functionality at the beginning, but you need to sort of allow for it. So again, using things like CCK and views allows you that wiggle room. Whereas if you use a module that implements something, or create your own module that implements things in a very specific way, you might not be able to accommodate when the client calls and says, "Oh, by the way, we've decided that our store is going to we're going to open a store in Germany, and so we need to be able to switch between dollars and euros on the store." I don't know if what we've implemented supports that, and you end up having to take down half of what you've built to rebuild it up so that they can add Deutschmarks or whatever they're using.
would that fall under like the category of being psychic and considering all the possibilities? And like, I mean, it's such a hard line, because it's like some of those things, you know, a year later you come back and you're like, oh my God, how could we not have, you know, predicted that we would need to do that? Of course we need to do this. And then there's some of it where it's like, you know, only a psychic could possibly have guessed that it would need to do that later. You know,
I guess it's where it pays off to have a well-rounded knowledge of what's out there for Drupal. And then as you talk to people, trying to come up with the most generalized solutions for them is usually a good thing. We have an item on our list called document, and but that also works with the clients. We're talking about documenting your code in our list, but I think also keeping sort of a paper trail between you and the client, saying, you know, like, I tried to create a generalized solution. This thing that you're talking about now, we've never talked about before, is also very helpful, to go back and say, I have all of the emails and we have never talked about this before.
So that's like two kinds of documentation.
It is. It's
like documentation for the next person who has to pick up the code, or even like you 6 months from now when you forgot why you wrote it. Mm-hmm. And then there's documentation that says, oh, no. You never said store when we said you reached this site.
Yeah, where did this online store thing come from?
Yeah. I mean, you want to try and create a generalized so that when they do ask for that, it's easy enough, and you can't say, you're not forced into a position where you say, we can't do this. I mean, you've got, you know, $400 left in your budget and you want an entire store added onto your website. It's just not going to happen.
Then they'll go, but see right here where I said dynamic? That's
just yeah. So I guess that in that respect, it's like, yes, talk to the clients as much as possible and try and make sure that you have a really clear understanding with them about not just what they're asking for specifically, but what they might possibly be asking for in the future.
What they might mean.
Yeah. Well, and just kind of like iterate through, you know, like the worst thing that you can do is like talk to a client, get a spec, and then say, okay, I'll see you in 3 months, and then come back and they're like, that's not what I asked for at all. I mean, you know, if you are building out the site and then every week or every couple of days or however often it works out, and you kind of show them this is what it does now and this is what it does now and this is what it does now, then they had a chance to like go, no, that's not what we were talking about at all, or readjust expectations or whatever, although all the while keeping them informed that, okay, well, we can totally add an online store, but that means we're going to cut these 11 features from your list. So how do you want to play that, you know? And, so I think that's another critical thing, is to, you know, not only talk to the client once, but keep talking to them and make sure that, you know, what they want and what you're doing are still aligned.
Well, that also brings to mind, the idea of having, like, the live site, but also, like, just a development site where you can build stuff out and show it to people kind of as you go as well.
And then revision control feeds into that as well.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, that was my
totally
thing. So back when I first started, before I got into Drupal, I didn't know what CVS was. I didn't know what any of that was. So my version of version control was I would like rename the file to, you know, something.module.old, and then I'd upload a new version of the module, and, you know, then I'd have old to old back dirty blah blah whatever, you know, and then
danger back.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my god, I'm about to break everything. Got back, you know, that kind of stuff. And like, So, A, it was horrible because, like, I didn't have a good naming convention of any kind, and so it was like, you know, I was, you know, sitting there, you know, trying to figure out which version, was it smurf.back or was it, you know, woozles.back that had the, you know, the version of the code that worked. And it's just like, once I figured out what version control was, I was like, oh my god, this is so awesome! Because basically what it is it lets you, you know, just when I'm at a good stopping point, I just say, okay, this is what I just did, click, you know, and then you basically do what's called a commit. But you're basically saving a log of everything you've done, along with notes of where you were at when you were at that point. And then you can go back and undo things if they don't work, and you can kind of follow the progression. You can go back to some line of code, you know, 6 months from now and be like, what kind of crack was I smoking when I wrote that? And you can look back and be like, oh, that kind of crack. Okay, that's good. You know, and so, yeah. So if you do nothing else, make sure you use version control. If you don't know what that is, go and look it up. Go to the Subversion website because they have a great... it's called Version Control with Subversion. It's a great online book. It's free. They got a nice little intro chapter that tells you what version control is, and that's what helped me understand it. And yeah, like, totally learn that. Make that part of your tool set because it will save your butt so many times.
One huge mistake that I know that I made that's closely related to version control is I thought I could just sort of keep track of the things that were broken. You know, somebody said, oh, that page isn't working. Oh, okay, I'll go fix that. You know, that's fine for one thing, but what if, like, there's two people working on it, or suddenly that list grows to, like, 10? I know, no one listening has ever had 10 things broken on a website at once, so it's an imaginary problem. But, you know, just project. I mean, this basically is, like, issue tracking, bug reporting, whatever. There's a bunch of different ways to do it. Like, Drupal.org has its own infrastructure for it. There are websites that let you set up, you know, bug tracking systems and stuff like that. But have a system. As soon as it gets past just you making to-do notes to yourself about your own private site that you want to be better, as soon as it gets past that point, you need some sort of system, because things are going to drop through the cracks inevitably if you don't have a structure to, like, just record and maintain that stuff.
It gets confusing very quickly. Yeah. Another mistake is not backing up your site. It's such a mortal mistake. It's such a fate. We need to speak about it in hushed tones.
So, is there any one of us that hasn't done it?
Oh,
or that has?
I've put it out of my mind.
Oh yeah, I was thrilled a couple.
I'm not going to remember those times.
I was thrilled a couple of months ago because I found an old zip file with, like, a backup of, like, half of the content from a site that I hadn't backed up, like, 3 years ago. And it was like, it had gotten nuked, and, like, I just, like, went through the mourning process, and, like, I was so thrilled because I found half of the stuff that I had written for it in a zip file somewhere. It's like, that shouldn't have been an issue. I should have just been able to say, oh, well, that sucks. I'll restore from last week's backup. You know, you'd lose some stuff, but it's a different world than, you know, starting from scratch.
Bye-bye. So, yeah, let's just make our point and move on.
Back up your code. I mean, if you're using a revision control system, you're already kind of backing it up through the revision control systems, through CVS or SVN or Git or whatever you're using as your version control system.
Back up the database.
Back up the database as well, yes.
And the files.
Just figure out how to do it.
The files in the files directory. If your host does it, make sure that they do it. Don't assume that they do it. Do it yourself. Just go once a week and do a database dump, or download the files directory. Whatever you need to do, just sort of make sure it happens.
And if you have a Sidekick phone, don't turn it off. Yeah, no. The people who owned Sidekick smartphones, Microsoft bought out the company that did it a while ago, and they've been humming along. And the other day there was an outage, like, for Sidekick phones, and people couldn't access their address book and calendars, I guess. And now the news has gone out that apparently all user data was lost.
Yeah. And then you get a corrupted backup. So what was that other site? Magnolia?
Magnolia.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had been doing backups, but apparently they'd been corrupted and no one had noticed, and suddenly, poof.
Yeah, we need to move on. Don't okay. talk about. You will wake the dead by talking about them. Don't. So, all right. Well, that's the end of our list. Yes, we have made mistakes. We have all made mistakes. Hopefully, some of you listening have learned and or been reminded at least not to make some of these mistakes yourselves. Let's move on to the pick of the week. The tip Lullabot tip of the week.
Migrate module, sweet mercy.
Heck yeah.
Long ago there was a module called Schema that was built. Basically what it could do is it could look at your database and discover what the table structure of your database was. It was really cool when Drupal's Schema API first came onto the scene, because it let you generate all the information Schema API wanted just by looking at an existing database. Well, then a module called Table Wizard was built on top of that. And this is what's really awesome. Table Wizard builds on top of Schema to use its sort of discover what tables are there abilities, and then automatically generates Views module integration code for those database tables, which means that if you have a bunch of data that you just imported from another source, or you've got an old CV comma separated file that you want to pull in and be able to like build views of, you can import it into a MySQL table, use Schema Wizard to discover what the structure of that table is, and then use Table Wizard to just automatically generate Views integration for it, and bam, you can build views out of that data.
Wait. So, we're talking about Migrate module, but you're...
No. Then, on top of that, it's better.
Okay.
There's a module called Migrate that can take those views of stuff that you've built and turn them into Drupal nodes or users or taxonomy terms or whatever. So you can say, I've got this giant comma-separated file full of random crap, or I've got my old database from another CMS that I built 9 years ago or something. You pull that in. Schema module determines what the structure of the tables are. Table Wizard builds views out of those things so that you can say, slice it and dice it and filter it down to just things that you want to import or whatever using the views module and all the filtering code that we're used to. Then you can use Migrate module to take the data that's present in those customized views that you've built of that table data, and it imports it into just Drupal elements like nodes and users and stuff like that. It's like this awesome like end-to-end like data importing system that is just it's the cat's freaking pajamas.
It's great too, because it basically obsoletes, how there's node import and user import and taxonomy import and blah 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 blah. It basically obsoletes all of those in favor of a generalized solution that will work for anything. I've been playing around with it to import. So my first Drupal site was wasn't a Drupal site at all, because I couldn't figure out how to get forms to not suck, so I went and made a Dragonfly CMS website for my wife. And so ever since then, my project has been getting that out of Dragonfly CMS and into Drupal, now that I know enough to make a decent Drupal site. So it's been great, because I think what we can eventually do with it is make little canned WordPress to Drupal migration and PHP Nuke to Drupal migration scripts and stuff like that, just by pointing and clicking it together, which is ace.
Oh, okay. So this is Moshe Weitzman. Company Curve wrote Migrate module and announced it at
Table Wizard module.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So this is these are Curve's tools that they were using for doing major data imports and mostly imports for people, large scale sites moving into Drupal. Wow.
Yeah, okay. It definitely takes some time to get used to, but it's time. I mean, by time to get used to, I mean, like, I spent a day messing with these three modules and sort of learning the ropes with them. But given that day that I invested in figuring out how they worked, now I can whip out migration, you know, data migrations for all kinds of crazy stuff. When before it was, you know, break out the PHP and start writing your own customized node import system. So many things, like making sure that you don't double import records, knowing that this table has to be imported before that table because the records depend on each other, and use Drupal's batch API so you don't have PHP timeouts. All that kind of stuff is baked into this, baked into the Migrate module.
Cool. Yeah, and it's awesome. They presented on this at DrupalCon
DC.
DC, and there's a video on we'll put it in the show, the podcast links. But yeah. Cool, Migrate module. Awesome. Good pick for anybody who wants to move from their old website content into their new website. It's a
because one final mistake is not thinking about data import until the last minute.
That's a good one.
Yeah, like, okay, so we got your new site set up. Yeah, but we don't have any of the content from the old site. You didn't send me an email. I don't have an email that says that.
We need an actual sad trombone sound to play on the podcast.
All right, cool. Well, there you go. That's podcast, what did we say, 78,
77?
78.
Late
70s. This is the late 70s podcast. 78.
We are now into the disco podcast era.
We're all alive in 78.
And great, good. Well, there you go. And thanks, everybody, for sticking it out to the end. And we will see you on the next Lullabot Drupal podcast. Take care, everybody.
Adios.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.